Fortunately, someone is available to explain all this technobabble. Your translation expert, Benjamin Rockwell, is here with Computer Talk Radio.
We've got a bunch of stuff in store for you this week here on Computer Talk Radio. Dr. Doreen Galley is going to talk about her new Whisper report on cybersecurity and how it applies to all of us. Steve Keske is going to be talking about Claude AI and the others. We're going to go back and forth in his fascination. When you consider he's in his 70s, his fascination with AI is quite fun. Keith M. Seedorf is going to give a discussion with me in regards to the top names at Apple, how they're exiting, and how that may or may not be good for Apple. I think it's going to be good, but hey. Mark, he's going to be talking about Open Dots 1 from Shox and the Anolon cast steel pans. On the scam series, AI-driven scammers may even look like, yes, look like real people thanks to AI. And on the IT Pro series, we're going to look at the future of how AI is going to change us, but hopefully not take over. I've got a bunch of listener questions as well. Ashley asks, why don't you cover shopping items anymore? Lucas, Windows 11 Home versus Pro. And Chris, do you ever take time off from Computer Talk Radio? And during the holiday season, that's a good question. The website, of course, if you miss any of that, is computertalkradio.com, computertalkradio.com. You can grab the podcast there. You can contact us, or you can phone me at 888-NERD-888. That's 888-637-3888. Let's dive into the news from the last week. And annually, Time Magazine. Okay, a magazine is a group of paper pages that are all connected to each other. Okay, you know what Time Magazine is. Anyways, they announce their person of the year every year, and this is the time when we see it. And this is sometimes tame, and sometimes it generates a serious volume of conversation and controversy. It truly is about the impact over the years. So past leaders have famously made the cover, famous or infamous. This year it was the architects of AI, which, no matter how you feel about AI, is an apt item. This past year has been harder and harder for me to talk about news about anything other than AI, as so many have embraced the idea of it, that most news stories are about exactly that. Even AI-generated news stories about AI-generated news stories have made the grade in some editor's office. The key thing here is that Time Magazine is telling us something we already know. AI is definitely a moving force, and there are many humans behind this paradigm shift in how we consume print and sound and video, and it will continue that way. Along those same lines, if you think you're having problems with AI being wrong, I want you to put yourself in the shoes of a librarian. Many years ago, I approached this librarian. It was a friend, and I had this vague storyline from a book that I'd read years prior, and she told me the name and author without batting an eye. Oh, yeah, it's this. These folks who seem so quiet at all times, reserved and studious, who you can rely upon for information off the internet, are now fighting back, softly and gently. Apparently, they've been constantly bombarded by requests for books that don't exist anywhere except in the hallucinations of AI. It's actually arrived at the point where many are having to argue with people who somehow insist that AI must be more right than the professionals who have been doing this for years, dealing with all of these thousands upon thousands of books in the library. This is an example of how life could go, however, so it's important that we all take the time to take care to listen to the folks who can be a resource in a time of bookish need. Now, Netflix, you're probably well aware of who they are. They're a juggernaut in the streaming world. They just announced plans to acquire one of the biggest libraries of TV and video entertainment, Warner Brothers. So a few years back, Amazon purchased the MGM library, and that was 4,000 film titles and 17,000 TV episodes. Netflix said, hey, let's outdo Amazon. And this new acquisition of Warner Brothers with HBO and HBO Max results in a bit larger of a setup for them. Okay, I said 4,000 films for MGM. Warner Brothers brings 12,500 feature films. It brings 2,400 television programs comprising of 150,000 individual episodes. This is a total of 145,000 hours of programming. Okay, the purchase price was huge as well. The MGM, that purchase by Amazon, that was $8.5 billion. Netflix dropped $82.7 billion for Warner Brothers. Now, they have noted their plans are, they're going forward plans. They're going to keep HBO Max separate for the meantime. And, okay, we do need to know that there's going to be a year and a half before this all finalizes, before this clears through the various government approvals. And, oh, you're forming a monopoly. Well, no, we're not a monopoly because Amazon over there and all that. Okay, but this, when it's delivered, has a large amount of potential viewing for all of us. A lot more movies and TV shows that we really would like to see in one spot versus scattered across a whole bunch of other locations. We'll likely see a lot of interesting evolution of how this all works out for us. So moving on, another entertainment juggernaut is Disney, and OpenAI is getting a $1 billion boost from them. Specifically, this is going to go towards Sora and along with that, ChatGPT imaging. So this is all an announcement of Disney dealing with the money, but also allowing 200 of their famous characters or so to be alongside of you in the video and static imagery that we're talking about. Yes, the idea of you hanging out in the Star Wars universe alongside of your favorite droids, or perhaps being placed alongside Mickey Mouse in Disneyland without having to travel there, are distinct possibilities. Now, along with this, yes, Disney is famous for keeping control of their IP. So we're going to see a lot of different things to ensure that content doesn't run anywhere afoul of Disney standards. Now, this may change how we view the usage of AI by Disney in their various media platforms and adjust how much we tolerate it on the small or even the big screen. If we're empowered to use it and we can get cool stuff, maybe we'll let them slide a little bit more. This is going to be an interesting exercise in how content is created with AI, and it could lead to other similar decisions by other intellectual property owners as they seek to also enter into the fan base that uses AI. Now, I preach about the responsible usage of tech, so everyone should be watching this one carefully. Australia's ban on social media for those under 16 took place this past Wednesday. Just about all of the major apps are included along the way, including Facebook, TikTok, and YouTube. These various brands, they are struggling here and there with glitches like false positives for being over the age of 16. But apparently, the government is actually being a little bit free with it. They're expecting some slop, and they're going to say, hey, you got to fix this. And this is going to be very interesting. What concerns me most is that there are some parents out there teaching their youth various ways around the standards, essentially how to break the law. Now, I get that some may consider it an unjust law, but I also see that perhaps this may get those youth away from addictive tech habits, which is probably a lot better of an approach. How is this going to impact the youth in Australia for the better or worse in a couple of years? How is this going to play out elsewhere as some other countries like Malaysia and some of our states are even considering this? Time will tell, of course. Now, there are some ideas around social media that do need some review. And before I continue, this was a proposal, not an actual implementation of policy or law. Apparently, the U.S. Customs and Border Patrol is floating the idea of background checks for visitors that span far more than you'd imagine. The idea examine online presence, including your social media postings and profiles going back 5 years, with all of your information accessible. Further, they're including the idea of phone numbers and emails for the past 5 to 10 years, and information about your family members. And it's posed as a way to prevent the wrong people from coming here. But it's kind of Orwellian to me. Again, they're opening it up for discussion, but my response is simply a resounding no as it steps into one more layer towards invading the First Amendment rights of actual citizens rather than visitors. Come up next, why don't I cover more shopping items these days? That'll be next here on Computer Talk Radio.
Let's talk about on and off.
You mean like light switches?
Yeah, the original user interface device.
And you were there, right?
Hey, I'm not that old.
Yeah, you are. So on and off.
Yeah, only with no humans doing it, like...
But you and I both have our computers on CyberPower UPS systems.
Yeah, so we have power, but there's another on and off.
Oh, right. Online and offline.
You got it. Meaning another UPS at the cable modem and VoIP phone and Wi-Fi router.
And even a low-cost standby UPS can handle those. Better, of course, if it has AVR.
Right, so it doesn't have to hit the battery just because the line voltage drops.
Maybe it's a good time to mention the promo that saves $10 to $15. Details are at the CyberPower website.
And maybe you could put it on your website?
Oh, that's already done at ComputerTalkRadio.com.
You know, on and off. You take really good care of your listeners.
Ashley reached out to me, and her question is a good one. I've been tuning in for years. You used to talk about holiday shopping and cool tech gifts, especially around this Christmas time. Why don't you cover shopping as much anymore? And Ashley, you're not the only person who's asked this question in recent years. Of course, Ashley reached out to me at ComputerTalkRadio.com, ComputerTalkRadio.com. You can do it as well. I will answer your computer questions, your technology concerns, whatever they may be, even in regards to some of the different shopping you may be doing. I encourage that. But in Ashley's case, yeah, things have shifted. Things have changed since the days when holiday shopping segments were a big part of Computer Talk Radio. And there's a lot behind this. And this is kind of, I've shifted a lot away from this. And a lot of it has to do with online shopping has really taken over. And there's a lot of different SKUs. And what are SKUs? These are all of the different products out there. It used to be I would be able to give you guidance on a few major computer purchases. You know, we had a matter of a few laptops from one company, a few laptops from another one, and a few laptops from another one. And then we shifted over the years to these price bands. What are you looking for? Do you need power? Do you need something for a college student, or do you need just something for email? And I went through a number of different things there. But everything evolves. Everything changes. Today, there is so much that is going on. Back in the day, holiday shopping meant you went into a crowded mall and these big box stores, and there would be all kinds of pandemonium and all of that. And now today, everybody just clicks buy now, and then they wait for the delivery truck. Additionally, we get into the idea that tech cycles are a lot faster. We're seeing a lot of churn in how the products are evolving, but yet while we see this shift, it's usually, not usually, it's almost always less dramatic. We used to see huge leaps and bounds. And Keith and I have talked about it, the idea of the first iPod and the first flat screen TVs and smartphones. But most products this year and for a number of years have been going through, and they focus on evolutionary changes, not revolutionary ones. And we've covered that a number of times here on the show. It's getting rather boring to watch some of these product announcements from some of these companies. And they say this is the best thing since sliced bread, except that's what they said a year ago and 6 months prior and a year before that. And it's not much better than it was. And the latest gadgets are more about small upgrades than something that is a game-changing breakthrough. We've also seen that the deal culture, and I put that in air quotes, deal culture, it's changed. So I want you to think about back years ago. We go back 10 years ago. There were all kinds of different things. It was Black Friday, and then we had Cyber Monday, and those were big, huge events. And there would be flash sales that would happen. But now we're seeing this idea that deals pop up year-round. We've got Amazon Prime Days, which is Prime Day, which is multiple days, multiple times in the year. And everybody competes with that, so everybody else has their own thing going on. And there are all kinds of different price comparison tools out there as well that make it easy for everyone to find the best offer at any time. The wild swings in pricing for similar products are gone, and this is really due to the fierce online competition that online shopping has brought. If something is way overpriced, it's a scam, and if it's underpriced, it's probably a scam. And the scams are everywhere. The hype is everywhere, too, including with scams. With so many different products online, it's getting easier for people to get duped by fake reviews or sketchy gadgets. And I've shifted Computer Talk Radio in a different direction where we spend more time warning you about what not to buy than really hyping the next big thing. And that next big thing hasn't come along yet, and gift giving itself has shifted as well. And that kind of follows in along with that whole disappearance of that next big thing. Today, instead of physical gadgets and new exciting things, a lot of people are gifting subscriptions or apps or digital experiences. It's no longer about unwrapping a box, and it's more about sharing access. And then we get into another direction, and that is that social media drives so many different trends. And, you know, everybody is going to see all kinds of different things through various influencers, the YouTube reviews and TikTok demos and all of that. And they're not waiting around for Computer Talk Radio or some other show or magazine to cover this. This is coming to us as a bombardment. Everybody is being fed all kinds of different information on a lightning fast scale. And this makes the shopping conversation far more fragmented and fast-paced. And yet, through all of that, I want you to reflect on tech and how it has evolved even further. A matter of devices are no longer tailored to individual needs. You know, we had fitness trackers and smart home gear and gaming setups that were big back in the day, but now recommendations for an individual are so much more important. Who are we buying for? What do they have? What don't they have? You know, back in the day, I remember, what do you get for the guy who has everything? Well, these days, everybody has a lot of everything that they want and need. It's this evolving architecture that has really changed how we think. Shopping isn't what it used to be. Neither is tech. And I have to keep up with all of this. I have to focus on really helping you navigate the new landscape, finding real value, or really the biggest thing here, The most important thing that computer talk radio has evolved into, we're coming up on 18 years, we have worked to make sense of these endless options that are being presented to us day after day. I'm helping decipher a lot of these different things. People ask me far more these days, what is this thing? Help me understand. I just had a call the other day about NAS, network attached storage. And I talked about my Synology NAS here. And I've had other conversations along the way that talk about unpacking the different nuances of laptops or desktops or whatever, and all of the different meanings behind some of these things, rather than which laptop should I buy. I do get a lot of A or B, which one of these is better, and then I have to ask questions, and I do that. And I offer to do that for everybody. I am more than happy to answer any specific questions about your needs. But at the same time, because it's gotten so hyper-specific for individuals, because that entire landscape has just shifted around and readjusted, that doesn't always make for great on-air content. But that's okay. I want to encourage you, feel free to reach out with any of your computer questions, your technology concerns at computertalkradio.com, and I will get back with you. This is Benjamin Rockwell. I'll be back in just a moment.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them. Screwdrivers and other tools, yep. Cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. MicroCenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building it yourself, MicroCenter is your resource. Check out MicroCenter.com today. MicroCenter.com.
The website, ComputerTalkRadio.com, ComputerTalkRadio.com. That's how you can reach out to us. Scroll down to where it says contact us today, and we will get back to you with answers to your computer questions, your technology concerns, whatever they may be. Keith M. Sedor joins me now. And Keith, one of the big things that in another company, other than Apple, seeing upper management folks leaving would give you concern, would give stockholders concern, would give the customers concern and whatnot. And Apple has had a lot of leakage out of the upper management sections over the course of the last couple of months. And I would venture, I would offer to you the idea that I think that it's about time. This is a good thing. And my approach to this is, one of the recurring themes that you and I have had is a matter of Apple has been far more evolutionary than revolutionary for a number of cycles across all of the equipment recently, and far too much. And I think it's time for fresh blood. What are your thoughts on that idea?
Well, there are a number of people that have made clear that they will be exiting Apple for competitors like Meta. Yeah. There is a well-known financial resources company that said that Apple Senior Vice President of Hardware Technologies, Johnny Cerugi, would be leaving. And he retorted publicly to his team internally and publicly back to the same financial resources firm that he isn't planning on going anywhere for quite some time.
Okay, but that's one person. But there's a number of other people who have stated they're already gone or they've already left.
Well, and one of the things that is being discussed, of course, is the very top. And there's been a lot of chatter about Tim Cook retiring from Apple soon. And because Apple is at a turning point where they're about to finally release all of their very overdue AI products, including a revamped Siri 2.0, which was promised two or three years ago, and then promised last year, and now they're assuring us it's definitely going to be this spring. Tim Cook basically wants to see Apple turn a corner with all of their AI stuff, and he's not leaving until at least 2027. But that having been said, to get to the point of your question, a lot of these guys have been with Apple for a long time, and I really think there were things in the pipeline. There was a culture in the pipeline when Steve Jobs died in 2011, and then Johnny Ive was still with the company, so he was kind of best buds with Steve, and his design was kind of leading the corporate culture of hardware and software interface design.
Sure.
And I think that now that Steve's been gone for the better part of 14, 15 years, and Johnny Ive has been out of there for a while, I don't think the direction that we've been used to, that the tight, narrow, laser-like focus of Apple that we've been used to for all of those years since Steve Jobs returned at the turn of the century, I think that laser came out of focus and it's just this big, giant, bright light. And I do agree with you that it's going to take some fresh blood to bring things back into focus and to take that blinding white light that is Apple's raw intelligence and vision and to narrow it into a pinpoint laser beam that they once were and bring everything full circle again.
I don't think it's even a matter of a laser beam in the focus. It's a matter of fresh blood. I think that you present that like, okay, we can promote the people that have the vision within the company. And I think it's time that they come up with, they look around and they find people that are going to come in with new ideas and new direction and go, I have a vision for this product, for that product, not necessarily the entire line like Steve Jobs had, but they need somebody coming in from outside that is going to help bring the smartphone experience to a new level. Somebody from the outside that's going to bring the desktop side to a new level. We've been hearing about the merging of the operating systems, the similarity between the two, for well over a decade now, and there's still some, they look similar, but there's still some disconnect along the way, and I think they need to find new directions to grow in and expand in, and that's going to take people who think outside of the Apple box.
Are you saying the people who think different?
Yes, because Apple is no longer thinking differently. They still use that, as far as I know, but so much I see there.
Yeah, no, I think different was from the late 90s. That was when they still had a rainbow logo.
Didn't I see that recently? I don't know. Yeah, but you get the idea, though. It's a matter of, to me, you need to bring in revolutionary young kids that can give ideas rather than rehashing and mildly improving what we've seen over the course of the last few years.
Well, like anything else, I think it's going to be based upon some revolutionary leap forward in technology like quantum computing, because really you can't keep pushing computer specs forward you know, and keep making things on the chip level smaller. But physics gets involved, and all of a sudden you can't go any smaller, and you can't, you know, go any deeper, because, you know, how much more powerful do you need to make your word processor?
Yeah, and I don't see power as being a thing anymore that we need to be chasing after.
Exactly.
I see innovation and new ideas, things we haven't thought about, just like Steve Jobs had thought about. What happens if we put the camera, the calculator, the phone, the this, that, the other thing all together into one package? And that was exciting. What we've seen since, not so much. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell.
And I'm Keith M. Seador.
You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Hi, this is Benjamin Rockwell. Most of us use digital cameras nowadays, but what do we do with those old pictures and slides in the back of the closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. If you have boxes of old slides, then you know they fade more and more each year. Let Legacy Digital scan them for you and stop the aging process dead in its tracks. You'll get beautiful 10-megapixel digital files, color-corrected and ready for printing. All this is done faster and cheaper than buying a film scanner and doing it yourself. Your files are then burned onto gold archival DVD discs where they will last for generations. Call right now, mention my name, Benjamin Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY. And tell them Benjamin sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
Phone number 888-NERD, 888, that's 888-6373, 888. I am here. I will answer your computer questions, your technology concerns. If I don't happen to answer the phone, that's okay. Leave a message. I will get back to you with answers to whatever it is that you might be thinking about. Mark Brownstein joins me now. And Mark, I understand you've got a new set of earbuds from the company Shox.
Yeah, I sure do. Now, these are different from the ones that hang around the head, and those work great too. But the Open Dots one are my current choice. And let me tell you a story.
Okay.
I had to go somewhere, and in California and a lot of other states, the law says you cannot have two earbuds, one in each ear.
Yeah.
And if you do, you can get pulled over and all that stuff. I didn't want to take the chance, although a lot of people are passing me at 80 on surface streets. Mm-hmm. And I figure that if police were active, they'd go after these guys, yeah, not look to see what I've got in my ear, and certainly not look to see if both ears are covered.
Right.
But again, I didn't want to take a chance. So the Open Dots came up, and I figured I would use those. These are pretty much unobtrusive. Mm-hmm. One side fits behind the ear, the other goes sort of into the ear, but they're open. You really can hear what's going on outside when you're wearing these things.
All right.
So I wore these when I went to a meeting and on the way back. And of course, nobody cared. When GPS announcements came up, the phone rang. I was able to talk on the phone. And this thing, these Open Dots are great for phone calls. Mm-hmm. As long as you're in a room that's not real loud.
Okay.
The mics will pick up all that noise. I walked into a grocery store. You can hear all the kids screaming. You could hear the carts banging. No way possible to use these for a phone call in a place like that.
Okay.
But if you're in an office or at home, they're ideal. I've used them for phone calls, and nobody has ever said they couldn't hear me clearly.
Okay.
And I could hear the other people clearly. I haven't found that in many earbuds. I do have the ViAIM, which I talked about a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
They do a great job at phone calls too, and they also do noise cancellation. But
now with this being Shox, these are bone conduction, right?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. All right.
There's a battery behind it. It clips on the ear. You don't feel it. Sometimes I've had to touch my ear to make sure I've got this on my head. Mm-hmm. So they do the bone conduction and they do good phone calls. And I'm really pleased with them. I have others that were more money and more capable and all that stuff. But for these, for what they do, they're great. And one other thing these will do that others do not mm-hmm. is that they can tell whether it's on a left ear or a right ear. So if you've got stereo going, yes. you can tell.
And it will, yeah, okay. I like
get
that.
Get separation. Oh, yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I like them. I'm using them right now. I've got a lot of other earbuds and ear headphones things. But I like these. These work okay. And the sound isn't bad. I'm not looking for hi-fi. I'm not looking for great fidelity.
Sure.
But they work.
Sure. All right. So what is the price point on those?
$200.
Okay.
Unless you can get them on sale. They have them on Amazon. Sure. You can go to Shops and buy them.
Sure. All right. I understand you also you had a set of pans that you you've also been reviewing.
I sure do. They're Anolon. They're N2, which is nitrogen fortified or something pans. They're cast steel.
Okay.
And a lot of people don't like cast steel. These things actually have more iron in them. I'm sorry, less iron in them than cast iron. They're not as fragile as cast iron. They're not as heavy. Mm-hmm, okay. And if you want to give them to your grandkids, they'll last a long, long time.
Okay.
These need seasoning. They're supposed to be smooth and slick when you get them out of the box. They needed a little seasoning. Seasoning doesn't mean salt and pepper. It means you got to rub some Crisco or some oil or something into them, heat them up. But the more you do this, the more nonstick they become.
Okay.
And I've got a wok, which I haven't quite used yet, but I've got a nice 10-inch fry pan that does a really good job. In this case, if you want to fry something, you don't have to use a lot of shortening or oil or grease or whatever you'd use. Motor oil didn't work at all when it's rated, but butter seems to work fine. A little bit of vegetable oil works fine.
Yeah.
And after a few uses, you don't really need much at all.
Yeah.
The stuff doesn't stick.
You know, I don't use, if we turn into a cooking show, I don't use grapeseed oil for cooking. My wife is really against the idea of having seed oils around. But I will use grapeseed oil for seasoning so I use cast iron pans. And I use that because the smoke point is just so high. It is very interesting how we are all of a sudden progressing into a new direction with cookware, and we're moving away from Teflon.
Oh yeah, we are. I have a set of porcelain skillets and stuff like that, and I'm concerned about scratching them or heat shocking them so that the porcelain cracks or breaks off. I still use porcelain pan, but I am afraid of it. This cast iron, cast steel is impervious to metal implements. Unless you cut on it, you're fine.
Very cool. As for now, that's Mark Brownstein. My name is Benjamin Rockwell. You are listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. Years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and just a normal person. Recently, though, it was clear to me that it was time to upgrade, but I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me. After searching around for 3 weeks, there it was, SiteGround. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their willingness to do things the right way. The SiteGround salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when a 32-ounce soda would do. These guys know WordPress, Joomla, and regular standard websites. These guys at SiteGround are awesome. SiteGround.com. SITE, ground.com. the bad guys are out to get us. They're out to get you, me, and everybody they can. And I will tell you, this is one of the bigger things that we're seeing a growth in this, I'll call it scam industry. And it's this live-looking AI customer service impersonators that they're really getting better at this. It's so smooth, so natural. And you don't realize that you're talking to AI and a scammer until your wallet has already been broken into. And they are now good enough with AI voice and video to mimic corporate reps in real time. And you've got to keep your antenna up because the scammer on the other end is no longer a clumsy robot. It can actually be a performer wearing a digital mask. It can be somebody on the other end of the line, and they're making movements that are very realistic. And this all revolves around real-time support agents that are using the AI power out there. And they look like they could be an actual rep from your bank, your carrier, your shipping service. And it's interactive, it's convincing, and it's timed to match real issues. And at this time of the year, we're all on edge, and we want to get things handled right away. And it usually starts off with some kind of text or email, and it claims it's something routine, billing alert or account change or delivery hiccup, and it's linked to a fake portal where the AI rep is going to pop up, and it's going to walk you through some verification. And along the way, they're going to be very eager to do all kinds of identity confirmation. They'll look for your social security number, your credit card, or various one-time use passcodes under the guise of preventing whatever it is that the calamity, the chaos that they are showing that could happen if you don't do this right away. They want you to fix this issue right now. And this is getting really insidious because the avatar, because that's actually kind of what you're looking at, it's reacting conversationally. It can be a human behind this. So that means that the size, the typing, the nodding, or showing concern, this all feels real enough and human enough to disarm you. And you would normally hang up on somebody who is a voice-only scammer, but they're driving you towards these websites where it looks real, it looks official, it looks like it's a rep from your bank. So first off, not really first off, basically, if you come across something like this, just end the conversation immediately. I want you, if you have a problem, I want you to contact whoever it is directly using a known phone number or a known app. I want you to, it's your bank, it's Amazon, it's whoever. Do not trust any support agent who appears only after you click the link in a message. Better yet, don't bother clicking any links in any messages. Go direct to the source. At the end of the day, scams succeed when they borrow the gloss of legitimacy and the tempo of panic. Just slow it down a beat. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio.
Let me tell you about The Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio. So I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at theradiofactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country. But many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows The Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with theradiofactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, the Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. Theradiofactory.com.
he wears a pocket protector as a fashion accessory. But he is a nerd. Bringing you news and knowledge from the world of computers and technology, here's Benjamin Rockwell with Computer Talk Radio.
We are halfway through this week's Computer Talk Radio. Of course, the website, computertalkradio.com, computertalkradio.com. That is how you can reach out to us. Scroll down to where it says contact us today, and I will get back to you with answers to your computer questions and your technology concerns. Of course, the podcast is there as well. But if you'd like to phone me instead, the phone number is 888-NERD-888. That's 888-6373-888. Steve Keske joins me now, and Steve, you have been doing some background research on some of the stuff with AI, and you wanted to talk about a particular AI?
Well, it's the company more than the AI itself.
Okay.
And that is, it's called Claude.
Claude, yeah, like Jean-Claude Van Damme, the famous actor.
Right.
Yes, go on.
But anyway, the company impressed me more than, you know, the software's probably good, but it's this company that has gone out of its way to say, okay, we've got this software.
Yeah.
Now let's test it to find out what it's capable of and what we want it to do and what we don't want it to do.
Yes.
And in other words, putting up those guardrails.
Yes. Yes.
And
all of the AI companies, to some extent, because of the nature of AI, they have to put up guardrails.
Right.
And each of them takes a different approach to guardrails. They take a different approach to a lot of the different interactions that they have with AI.
Yeah, this particular company, and I forget what's the name of it, but for instance, they had they tested out the software on reading fictitious emails.
Yeah.
And found out that it got to a point where if they said, well, we're going to turn you off, that it decided to blackmail the guy that made the decision.
Yes, yes. And
they said, now, wait a minute here. This is not good. So then they went back and said, okay, well, how did this occur and what prompted it and so forth and so on, so that they could build in a guardrail against it ever happening in the real world.
Yes, yes. And this is something we've heard a number of different approaches where AI has gone through and it tries to find ways to stay on, and that is just one of the ways.
Oh yeah,
that we've heard about.
And they also in one case hired a philosopher professor to teach morals to their AI program.
That's a very interesting approach. Now, was that Claude that did that, or was it one of the others?
No, it was Claude.
Okay, all right.
That's the Claude company said, okay, we're going to teach Claude how to what morals are, and hopefully, it takes root in all of that, and a lot of other things that software companies, I think, should be doing with almost all of their software. Because I was taught by a bunch of really rudimentary programmers that said you never produce a product unless you have fully tested it in all situations that it could possibly run into.
Yeah, and that's not a matter of rudimentary for the folks who taught you, I mean, that's a rudimentary law that we should be doing. No matter if we need to be thinking ahead, we need to be processing the potential ramifications of every single decision that is made for that software and by that software. Yeah. And there's a lot to it. And as a result, we have a lot of AI that is growing in leaps and bounds without as much as even a moment of thought about what could happen if this went wrong. Yeah. And that of course is a scary approach, a scary world to be thinking about.
No, they were talking about in the one case where, hey, if the productivity by the AI becomes a situation where it determines it doesn't need people anymore, can it actually turn and kick out all of the people and just go off on itself, making it, you know, making profit for itself?
Sure.
Yeah. And these are some of the considerations that they were saying, wait a minute here. Wait. We've got to really start thinking and testing through all of this stuff.
Yes.
To find out what the what the AI exactly will do about it.
What you've described is like that. Everybody's had a coworker like this at some point in time, and they come forward and they say, I know better how to run this company than the CEO. The CEO has no idea how to run this company, and I know best. Now, in the normal world, eventually somebody gets wind of that, and that coworker is no longer around. They're discovering that they don't know how to run the company. But with AI, we've already grown to a point with AI. 3 years later, since ChatGPT came out, where we are reliant upon this. And a lot of the folks out there in IT and elsewhere in the day-to-day job, I will tell you that not a day goes by these days where I don't utilize AI to provide summaries of information or, hey, get me the stats on this or something like that. Sure. And it has become far more powerful and far more of a resource, and we're not going to be able to kick the AI to the curb.
No.
Lest our company or our job gets left behind.
Yeah, one example, not so much just that right there, but one example, they called a particular version of Claudius.
Yeah.
And they had it running the vending machines in the company.
Okay.
All right. So that you put in an order and it does the ordering and it negotiates the price for whatever that you want and all of this.
Yeah.
You know, through Claudius.
Yeah.
And halfway, you know, and it sometimes it makes money and sometimes it doesn't make money, and they were lucky. Okay, what's going on? And then they found out that some of the own employees were cheating Claudius.
Uh-oh. Yeah, that's not good.
But they found out how it could be done, and they're saying, okay, how do we fix this?
Yeah.
So what they did was they put in a CEO, called it Cash. Uh-huh. And what it does is it monitors what Claudius is doing, and Claudius cannot make certain types of decisions unless Cash is involved.
Okay.
So you got a two-level system, and they found out that that works a whole lot better.
That's okay. So AI, the AI platform, Claudius has an AI boss.
Yes.
Oh, man. Oh, great. And next up, we'll wind up with some kind of middle manager along the way.
Well, you got to have a middle manager.
Yeah, of course. The middle manager will also be AI. Yeah. And so much for the job of the guy who it was to just come in and refill the vending machines.
That's it. But I thought that was amazing that they could figure out that, you know, and it worked.
Yeah.
That it kept the, shall we say, the employees from getting it to run off on different tangents. And it steadily made more money.
Very interesting. Yeah, all kinds of crazy stuff with AI. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That's Steve Geske. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. You have a couple of those new carbon open frame racks from CyberPower, right?
Yeah, I love them. I configured a 25U to 40 inches deep, about twice as deep as a regular rack, and put more than a dozen peripherals in it.
You know, I saw your article about it. I can't believe it's not clutter.
And my 45U carbon rack, that's also 40 inches deep, will hold a ton of networking and control systems, the network video recorder.
Holy screwdriver, rack man!
You're getting one of their gorgeous enclosed racks soon.
Oh yeah, the 24U. Bigger than their wall mount carbon racks, but smaller than their tall boy.
Did you see what's happening with carbon on the CyberPower website?
Oh yeah, the promo, 10% off all their racks and rack accessories through the end of September. I put a link up at computertalkradio.com. computertalkradio.com. The website, computertalkradio.com, computertalkradio.com. That's how you can reach out to me. Scroll down to where it says contact us today, and I will get back to you with answers to your computer questions, your technology concerns, whatever they may be. Dr. Doreen Galley joins me now. And Doreen, one of the big, huge things that you have set up is a whisper report in regards to cybersecurity. And this is something that you're about ready to release. And this is a world that is, I'm passionate about this because there are so many people. I mean, I've got the scam series here on the show because there are so many people that need to really focus and pay attention to this. And it's great you're doing this. Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. So interestingly, the one going public is the best practices for enhancing cybersecurity in fintech. And for those of you familiar, it is a TB code, a TBW 2067.
Okay.
And we also had published earlier, made fully public, TBW 2063, which was the question of enhancing cybersecurity in healthcare. But one of the things I realized, even though they're slightly different angles, all the advice applies to you and me at home as well.
Definitely.
So I thought we'd have some fun with it. So like in the healthcare one of the things they mentioned was all the devices. So we have our phones, our watches, we have our intelligent homes, our doorbells, our cameras, our children's alarms, you name it, whatever, the garage door opener. And in healthcare, they have all their medical devices, smart devices. And it doesn't matter what the devices are if you don't keep them up to date.
Yes.
Then as we know, people will exploit the latest vulnerability from the latest software update that you never installed. And that's one of the reasons why all of these smart devices really need over-the-air updates.
Yes.
Automated updates.
Yes, everything.
Because if you don't update it automatically, you'll forget.
Yes.
And a lot of these smart fire detectors don't have updates, by the way, but they're on your network.
So interestingly enough, so I've got a lot of smart home stuff here in the house, and I've talked about that a number of times. There's 50 light switches and 20 smart bulbs and so forth and so on. They actually, I've got them all set. I have to manually set each of them up when I'm setting them up to auto update the firmware. And I shouldn't, that should be just a default. All of this should auto update. But you're right. Mm-hmm. I am one of those people, to Keith's chagrin. I am running the beta version of iOS 26.3 or whatever it is on now, the beta version of that. But I enjoy the security that I get out of it. For the most part, most of the Apple updates don't really burn me. He's still sitting on, I'll jokingly say, he's sitting on iOS 15. I think it's one of the later versions of 18. It's like, at least go to 26. At least, you know, make that jump to the next version. And I do this throughout everything I've got. I make sure I've got the latest updates on them, especially if it's an automated update. Great. Deliver it to me.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, there are occasions when you will get bitten by the auto update. We've all experienced it in our lifetime. But when you have that many devices all around your home, but it's particularly true for people that have had their smart home for a longer period of time, because the older the smart device is, the lower the probability it can auto update over the air. And that's true with a lot of healthcare devices. I mean, a lot of these scanners are really expensive. You know, MRI machines.
Sure.
Right. You know, you just go and replace it. Right. Update it. It's not like that. And so a lot of times they may have self running NT in healthcare. Older systems. And so, but yeah, device maintenance, interoperability, because if your systems don't naturally work together, then any of the security systems that any manufacturer created won't work because it was devised to work in its ecosystem. Mm-hmm. You have conflated ecosystems. They compete. And that can create vulnerabilities. It makes it challenging. And depth in defense. I like depth in defense. Mm-hmm. Or is it defense in depth? Admittedly, I don't know if it's my dyslexia. I mean, it's
all right. Yeah.
Sense both ways. Admittedly, that's one of my, for some reason, I keep forgetting which word comes first. But I think it's depth in defense. And it's basically how you can layer stuff on. You know, you get as much as you can out of any security solution. And we've talked about this in privacy, and you can't repeat it enough. But that last percentage is going to be expensive and useless, and you shouldn't spend the money to get that complete 100% compliance.
Yes, yes.
It was meant to cover 90% of everything. Let it cover what it does easily, and then find another solution for the stuff it doesn't cover, and keep piling it on and say, well, it's okay. You know, I can have protect my personal ID and protect my name in finance and credit lock, but I can still have a firewall on my network.
Yes, yes, you know? Exactly.
Defense in depth. And we talked about automation, but that's true. And it's good to test it. Although, admittedly, I think at home, it's a lot tougher to test it.
Yeah.
Usually you find out when someone breaches you.
Oops. Whoops. What happened? Oops. Yeah.
You know, or when your neighbor magically appears on your network. But in fintech, they said the same thing. They're like, take a layered approach and make sure you constantly scan and make sure you're up to date. So in one way, they're like, you know, interoperability, keep up to date, and frameworks. And the other ones are like scanning, keep them up to date and watch. But you also have to train.
And so training is a big one. And for me, I look at people and they go, oh, great. Here's another training session from IT about security. And no, all of us need to be taking this. All of us need to be acing this. And the reality is most companies, the only people who are actually acing it are the IT folks, and not even all of the IT folks. And the biggest area, and I don't know how old this number is, I'm going to roughly say 3/4 of the cyber incidents are not caused by somebody leaving something unpatched. They're not caused by something, zero-day vulnerability. They're caused by human failure. That's right. That space between your ears. People are not thinking through the idea that Bill Gates, Mark Zuckerberg, Elon Musk, they're not going to give you $1 million just because your email address has been selected to give money away. This is just ridiculous.
You got it.
Yeah, people have to really just think about it. If it sounds too good to be true, it probably is.
I get random invoices from people I don't do business with trying to get me to open their attachments.
Oh, yeah,
That's a fun one. Yeah. No, but even within your home, right? You know, when you set up your children with a smart device or a computer, do you teach them not to reply to things, not to click on links? When you get a text, not to click on it. Maybe isitfishing.org is one of my favorite places to throw a link. But I will give you a full disclosure. So a cybersecurity team at my last location had an image of an attachment in a mail come in. So they went to check the attachment to make sure the attachment did not contain any malware or other intrusions.
Sure.
But it wasn't an attachment. It was a link.
Oh, yeah.
So they went to grab the attachment. What did they do, Benjamin?
They launched something. They weren't thinking. They needed
the link.
They needed more training. More training, definitely.
Yeah, no, this was the cybersecurity team that does all of that.
Oh, so
no. No. This is one of the top cybersecurity teams that cyber threats and everything. And yet, lo and behold, but this kind of comes down to it's not a question of when, it's a question of if. So what are you doing with your own personal technology?
I think you got that backward. I think your dyslexia kicked in. It's a matter of when you'll get into that accident. Yes.
Yes. It will happen. And so even with your own personal information, what have you done to recover yourself when it happens?
Yeah. You got to have backups. You got to be prepared for all of that. Hey, let people know where they can find out this whisper report, if I can say it.
Absolutely. TBWAdvisors.com/TBW2067. So that's T for technical, B for business, and W for whispers. And at TBW Advisors on YouTube is the video edition.
Very cool. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell.
And Dr. Doreen Galley.
You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them. Screwdrivers and other tools, yep. Cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. MicroCenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building it yourself, MicroCenter is your resource. Check out MicroCenter.com today. MicroCenter.com.
Luke has had a question, and it is a key question. If you are moving into Windows 11, or maybe if you already have Windows 11, and that is Pro or Home. And of course, you can reach out to me with your computer questions, your technology concerns, whatever they may be. Feel free to phone me at 888-NERD-888. That's 888-6373-888. Now, this is a problem, not really a problem. This is a question, a concern that people have had for a very long time. Do I want the home version or the pro version? And both of them have their strengths and all of that. Really, everything that you want, everything you need, should be in Windows 10 Home. There are a few different add-ons that come through the pro version. And those pro versions, if you have the need for these, definitely go into the pro version. But a lot of people, most people out there, don't really need to take the deep dive into these different issues. Let's start off with one of the biggest ones that Microsoft touts, and that is BitLocker. And the whole thing about BitLocker is that it does lock down your files. It locks down your hard drive. It is something that most people really don't need. If you are out and about, if you do a lot of traveling, you may consider BitLocker. It is something that will help you secure all of your data on your system. Now, if your system stays at home, if it is a desktop, or perhaps it's a laptop that you're utilizing mostly as a desktop sitting around the house, BitLocker can help you from hackers, but it's not a key concern for most people. Next step there is that there's something called Smart App Control, and this does a bit more than Defender does. It catches suspicious downloads before they cause problems, and it does add in some additional biometric login options. All right, so this again starts to get in that direction of this is great for business. This is great for a lot of people who want to go into that direction where they want that additional security, but it's not one of those end-all, be-all things. It's going to be something that you're going to want to consider. Next up, we start talking about some of the different benefits that come with gaming. DirectX 12 Ultimate support gives a little bit more ability for compatibility across games. It gives a little bit of a sharper visual image and faster load times, but it's not, again, a killer feature. It's not something that's, ooh, wow. So we go into next. Where are you going with artificial intelligence? And artificial intelligence is available. Microsoft Copilot, which comes with Windows, is something that's there. There are two various versions within this. One is really designed for most of us. And Copilot is kind of split up into that separate area where you can get the basic features or you can get the advanced features. And those advanced features start getting into a lot of different directions. They're going to be the nerdier directions than you are probably going to really think about. And this is an area which does add some strength to a lot of people. There is a lot more integration with Microsoft 365 apps. If you've got Microsoft 365, then, and we're talking about, you know, this is the Office portion, your Word, PowerPoint, Excel, and whatnot, then you might get some benefit out of this. The AI is going to be a little bit better along through there. Now, you're also going to get some higher usage limits over the home version of this, and that is going to assist you if you're doing some advanced AI level work. Copilot Home is ideal for most people for your personal use. It's going to give you a lot of that essential that you want. But there's some level of robust features that are going to be coming along with the pro version here. The last item I'm going to cover here is something called Hyper-V. And Hyper-V is a direction where you've got to sit down. You've got to think about how you're dealing with Windows. Are you going to be running any virtual machines? Now, virtual machines are something that people don't really understand a lot, so I'm going to try and do this in a very quick nutshell. The idea of Windows, most people are just dealing with Windows. They just load the apps, you're loading the browser and so forth. But you can set up a virtual machine. Let's say you want to try out Linux. You want to try out, and there's tons of different versions of Linux. You want to try out 10 different versions of Linux, and you want to configure them. You want to see how they work. You can set up Hyper-V. And Hyper-V is that virtualization platform. It allows you to put multiple operating systems on top of another one. So Windows sits there as your base operating system, but you can have these little virtual machines doing their own work, their own thinking, their own processing all the way along through this. And this is really great if you want to dive deeper into that Linux realm. You want to start diving into, yes, you can load Windows as a virtual machine onto a Windows platform. And that actually can get really weird, but it does allow you to isolate a lot of things. It allows you to do some experimentation that is outside of the norm. So if any of these things that I covered all the way along the way, if they start sounding alluring to you, again, if you're traveling, you go for the BitLocker and the smart app control. If you're getting into AI, you start really thinking, you know what? I want something more out of Copilot than what I'm getting. If you want to do those deep dives into virtualization, loading up all kinds of different platforms on top of Windows 11, then yes, perhaps you want to go in that direction of the pro version of Windows 11. Otherwise, most people out there, you can just stick with Windows 11 Home. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Hey guys, this is Benny Rockwell. Most of us use video cameras nowadays, but what about those old movie films in the back of your closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. Imagine Grandpa's old 8mm and 16mm films that are just sitting in a box getting old and fading away. Legacy Digital will clean and recondition those films, capture them digitally frame by frame, and then produce beautiful DVDs of your precious memories on long-lasting archive-quality discs. They don't use a projector, and your films can't be damaged in the process, the best available for families like yours. The final results are gorgeous. What better way to preserve those precious memories for future generations? Call right now, mention my name, Benny Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY, 1-866-253-4229. And tell them Benny sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
This is Benjamin Rockwell, and now it's time to get down to business. This is where we talk about computers, the workplace, and how this all intertwines. And people keep asking or stating that AI is going to take all of our jobs. And there are others that say it's simply going to sharpen our tools. And both sides of this argument are really prognosticating without any real knowledge of what's going to happen over the course of the next 10, 20, 30, 40 years. So I'm going to take a step back here, and I want to just think about this from the aspect of how history has treated us. And we have the usual typical panic that's going on. AI sweeping in like this digital grim reaper, snatching up jobs with cold metallic hands. Okay, it's a concern, but this is a bit like assuming that the washing machine or the dishwasher would end domestic life as we know it. It didn't, but it did change things forever. On the flip side, treating AI just as a tool is also rather naive. Tools don't think back. Hammers didn't rewrite themselves overnight or learn new tricks while you're sleeping. AI sits somewhere between that Swiss Army knife and some wild animal. It's useful, it's powerful, but occasionally capable of really just hurting you if you're not paying attention. So we have to think through this from a big perspective here. We need to zoom out. We need to think about a generation, not just a product cycle. And AI is going to have its struggles along the way. 40 years is what I'm going to use here for a time frame. That's a generation at work, the people coming out of college right now. And over the course of 40 years is enough time for entire industries to rise and to fall, and for cultural attitudes to shift, like continents drifting. Technologies to mature, to mutiny, to mainstream to do all of this. So we need to think about this in the perspective of we need to think about what is potential to happen here. AI can become an amplifier where work becomes less about grinding and more about orchestrating, and people spending more time steering, less time shoveling the digital coal that makes up all of the data that is existing around here. Creativity will become a new level of literacy, and judgment will become the new horsepower. And that's just as AI is an amplifier. And then there's going to be AI as an allocator, and it will push humans towards roles that require empathy and ethics and ambiguity. These are things that AI does not have, nor is it likely to find anytime soon. AI will handle a lot of the repetitive, the razor-precise items. Although it's not there yet in any of those, it's not truly taking over the repetitive jobs. It is making it easier for us to find data. It's easier for us to figure out what we should do with this big, huge group of numbers, process them on down, and get meaningful results on the other side. But AI also does serve as some level of an economic agitator, where jobs aren't going to vanish, they're going to shift in that same pattern, that same thing that we've seen over the years that history loves to repeat. Now, the shifts may be bumpier, faster, and less polite than in past revolutions, but we can look back and the transition from the horse into the locomotive, or the horse-drawn carriage into the car. Well, yes, it did shift jobs. You are going to be hard-pressed to find a blacksmith today. You're not going to find someone who can shoe horses or build all kinds of different things from bare metal into just fantastical ideas. But every time we have looked back, humanity comes up with some kind of job killer. And every time we have found that we can create new types of work that we would not have imagined back in the 80s, nobody came up with anything like a cloud architect. Back in the 60s, nobody talked about user experience designer. Back in the 20s, nobody predicted data scientist. These are all roles that have arrived over the course of the recent years. And this is all a matter of history teaching us that work evolves faster than worry fades. Okay, there are cracks in here. There are a lot of things that are going to pop up along the way. Education is going to struggle to keep pace. I will tell you, I've seen this over the course of many years. I have seen companies scrambling to retrofit to various governance frameworks. All the way along, there are potential issues that we need to be aware of. And AI isn't going to take all the jobs, but it will take tasks, millions of them. And the more repeatable the task, the sooner that's all going to go away. It's going to augment our jobs, and we're going to see new fields pop up. But all the way along, humans will still matter because ambiguity, morality, and meaning do still matter. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. Years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and, well, a normal person. Recently, though, it became clear to me that it was time to upgrade. I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me. After looking for 3 weeks, there it was, SiteGround. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their care, their willingness to do things the right way. The site ground salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when all I needed was a 1-gallon bucket. The folks at SiteGround know WordPress, Joomla, and more. SiteGround.com, S-I-T-E, ground.com, for your web hosting needs. SiteGround. Chris posed a question that I get very frequently, and that is, it's a behind-the-scenes look at Computer Talk Radio. Do you ever take time off? And Chris, and everyone else out there, I will tell you that I don't take time off. I record a total of 80 minutes of content each week for the different stations that carry the show. And I do this in conjunction with all of the different folks you hear on the radio here on my show. And since I started doing this, I have been very intentional about the approach that I have gone at this. I have yet to release any kind of best of show. Now, I do use a few different tricks. This is not a live show. I pre-record a lot of different information and assemble some of these shows on a week-to-week basis or a couple of weeks out. And I will record interview segments and the regular segments sometimes in a block of three or four segments at a time. And I have set up so that I even have segments in case I'm sick. If I come down with the flu, I am covered. I can go a couple of weeks without actually sitting in front of the microphone, hopefully. And this is something where I have never reused the audio on the show. With all of the material that I have presented each week, no two segments have been identical. Now, I do cover a lot of the same topics. I believe that some of the different topics evolve, so I give different answers, and that may explain to some people who've been listening for a number of years, hey, you used to say this about iPhones, you used to say this about AI or laptops or desktops, and all of this shifts. All of this is a constantly evolving situation, so some of the information is going to be revisited with new updates, but I try to keep everything timely and valuable. I try to be informative and bring an idea of how technology is evolving to help us to make our lives so much better. And that means that I have to be on my game. That means I open up each week with the latest news segments whenever I can. Some weeks are just slow. There's not a lot of news. This is the time of year when news slows down. And they talk more about, oh, these great deals and all of that. And really, they shift away from what is new and revolutionary and exciting and interesting and all of that. So, yeah. I do take time off. I do have to plan ahead. If I take a week off, if I'm going on vacation, I'll spend some extra time recording in advance of my vacation. But you'll never notice that because, yes, again, I make sure that you've got new, interesting information every week that helps you bridge that gap to understand technology more and more. Because we are radio's broadest look at computers, technology, and how they impact your life. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. We'll catch you next week.
Let me tell you about the Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio. So I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at theradiofactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country. But many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows the Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with theradiofactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, the Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. TheRadioFactory.com.